O-O.
Radioactive.
Special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by New Cascadia Traditional, located at 1700 Southeast 6th Avenue. New Cascadia Traditional is open daily and provides a wide variety of bread with gluten-free options. Lunch was provided by Sizzle Pie, located at 624 East Burnside Street. Sizzle Pie offers vegan, veggie, meat, and gluten-free pizzas, along with salads, local beer, wine, and spirits. Dinner was provided by Cannon's Barbecue Rib Express, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, serving hickory smoked barbecue with house-made sauces. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a news and public affairs director to manage the evening news and public affairs programming, and to train and supervise volunteers. For this full-time position, we're looking for someone with proven experience in news and public affairs production, management and supervisory skills with volunteers with emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Sunday, September 23rd at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/newsdirector-hire-2018.
Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root those mountains down. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a stone in the rain. Oh, I wish there's a stone in the rain. If I was a stone in the rain, then I never would feel pain. Oh, I wish there's a stone in the rain.
Good morning. Thank you, Joe. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. This is listener-supported community radio, and it's time now for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Denise Morris, your host for this September 17th, Monday. Joe Clement is our engineer. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning. Course options and more information online at pugspdx.com. Well, this morning on the Old Mole, we have Bill Resnick in the second of a two-part interview with Heather Gautney. She's the author of the book Crashing the Party, From the Sanders Campaign to a Progressive Movement. Gautney is an activist and writer teaching at Fordham University. Part one of this interview aired last week, September 10th, and can be found online at kboo.fm/oldmolevarietyhour. Jan Hawken interviews Judith Arcana on Measure 106, the anti-abortion measure on the ballot this fall, and Lori Mercier talks with Deborah Thorne about the graying of consumer bankruptcy, how the shrinking of the social safety net is throwing record numbers of older individuals into economic distress. Again, I'm Denise Morris for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and thanks for tuning in this morning. Thanks for supporting KBOO and new and renewing members. We'll be talking to you more about membership later in the program. Now we'll just turn right to Bill Resnick and Heather Gautney.
Yes, Bill Resnick here. I have the book Crashing the Party, From the Sanders Campaign to a Progressive Movement, in my library, quite as that might sound. And more important, we have the book here at KBOO ready to offer as a premium, thanks to Heather Gautney, our guest today. Thank you, Heather. And Verso Book, they offered one copy of the book to new and renewing members. So, Heather, how did a tenured sociology professor in New York City, an office right next to Lincoln Center and every New York attraction in very short subway distance. How did you happen to get involved with Bernie Sanders and his campaign, and then when it was over became executive director of Our Revolution, which is sort of a spinoff from the campaign? How did that all happen?
Well, it's been an interesting path. Back in 2012, I was awarded a congressional fellowship to, that's awarded to postdoctoral professors, and I came to Washington and I worked for Bernie for a year in his Senate office and stayed in touch with him through the years. And when he decided to run, I volunteered on policy research in his campaign. And then shortly after, I got a call to serve in the budget committee, where the senator is the ranking member. And I went on leave to work there for 2 years. And after a year, I had the opportunity to become the executive director at Our Revolution. And of course, took it as a kind of hope to work on the other side of organizing around these progressive ideas.
After reading your book, and it had a good deal of love for the Sanders campaign and Sanders, but also a good deal of critique. It could have done much more to build that continuing social political movement of the working class. My guess is that Bernie and his folk read the book and said, okay, Miss Professor, here's a chance to work to build those movements, and then you accepted the offer and you're appointed executive director. Tell us about our revolution, the campaign, your vision for Our Revolution.
The critique of the campaign that I wrote about in the book was based on the fact that, after the primary ended, a lot of energy went into developing a progressive platform for the Democratic Party and then porting the Clinton candidacy because Trump, of course, is the nominee. So there was a lot of effort toward trying to build unity between the Bernie and Hillary camps. And in that process, there were a lot of people who'd been activated during the campaign who really didn't have a way to get involved. Were very turned off by Clinton and didn't want to jump on her campaign, but wanted to keep fighting for progressive ideas. And hindsight is, of course, 2020, because Bernie and the campaign had no idea that they would be this successful and would mobilize so many people. But looking back, it would have been great at some point during the course of the campaign to take stock and say, hey, we've got this tiger by the tail. We should start setting up parallel entities, whether that's leaving behind people in states or creating chapters of some sort, so that the people who were active can continue to be active at level. And that's really what Our Revolution is. In an ideal world, we would have started Our Revolution during the campaign to capitalize on that energy or funnel that energy. But it exists now. And that's the real primary reason for Our Revolution's existence, is grassroots organizing. And the way that occurs is through the development of local groups. So Our Revolution has hundreds of local groups that identify as members and are active in their locales, and it happens, at a different scale. So Our Revolution focuses on three kind of mechanisms or strategies for advancing the progressive vision that Bernie had set out in 2016. One of the ways is transforming the Democratic Party, and that happens inside the party and outside the party. One of the key efforts was the Unity Reform Commission that just made its final decision in August that the Democratic Party would stop using superdelegates. And there were a series of other issues that were resolved that had to do with barriers to voter registration. In places like New York, it's an absolutely arcane system. So part of that was working within the context of the Democratic Party to try to make changes and make electoral system, especially around the presidential, more fair. The other focal point for Our Revolution are issues. So educating on, Medicare for all and viability, college for all, what a federal jobs guarantee would look like. So we have what we call the People's Platform, that's a slate of really kind of specific legislative items, but also much broader areas, the criminal justice, as you said, climate change, education, public education. So we engage in different kinds of activities, educational activities on issues. And then the third is, of course, running candidates, which is what we've become most known for. And the way in which our electoral or endorsement process happens is that we don't go out there and select candidates who we think we should endorse. We take nominations from our group. So we know that candidate is linked in some way to a grassroots entity and is accountable to that entity. So the groups actually nominate the candidates, and then we have a process, of course, and we'll endorse, and then we try to support the group as they're supporting the candidate. You know, we have obviously Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York, and we have Ben Jealous running for governor in Maryland, and Andrew Gillum in Florida. You know, the list goes on of these sort of progressive stars who were inspired by the Sanders campaign to run and to run on those specific issues.
This is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, in the midst of our membership drive, and we are offering a copy of Heather Gautney's book, Crashing the Party, from the Sanders Campaign to a Progressive Movement. We've been talking so far about the Our Revolution group that Heather is now executive director of. Heather, I wanted to talk about something that you sort of warned me off, but I thought you had such a good idea that it's just worth talking about. It sort of made me think a lot. We were talking about the question of when you get into office without a tremendous movement behind you that's ready to go all the way and support you. If Bernie had been elected, he would have wound up with what they call a capital strike. Businesses and the whole apparatus would just stop investing. And that then leads you to an economic crisis, which inevitably gets blamed on the government. And then Bernie's popularity could really plummet. That's happened around the world in many places. The U.S., though, is in some ways unique, but it happens here as well. But you pointed out that a guaranteed income, a guaranteed federal jobs, as well as guaranteed medical care, would insulate the candidate from an economic decline because people would be so much more secure. It seems to me that's the answer of the movement for dealing with the problem of the power elites. It's not just not cooperating, and it's not even conspiring, but by the actions they have to do, they just undermine the government in power. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
I have two impressions. The first is that I don't think that investors or capitalists, to use a broader term, would stop investing. I think that in any event, in any kind of system, those people are still going to look for ways. They're driven by a profit motive, and they're always going to find ways to profit off of the system. The question is how that can be reined in. So there are different parts of our history where this kind of profiteering off of everything under the sun, the drug industry, for example, they're raising the cost, right, of a drug 500 times its generic cost, things like that. There were deeper regulations, especially following the crash in the 1930s. So I think that problem, again, you know, sure, the stock market would take a hit, and I believe that to be true, but I don't think that you would just see an end to these underlying mechanisms of how capitalism works.
Yeah, but they lay off workers.
Sure.
Investment doesn't completely eliminate it, but in fact, it can go to other countries. It goes into safe assets like bonds and international bonds and all of the derivatives. And what you wind up with is really a decline in employment, and then there's a decline in demand, and then companies cut back more. I don't think you can rein them in as easily as you implied. But anyway, tell us about the guaranteed income, a federal job, a guarantee, and Medicare for all. The impact of that would be enormous.
Right. That's essentially Bernie's platform, is a kind of Keynesian model that was successful after the Great Depression in stabilizing the economy. And the idea is to create a real social safety net, and to what he's been talking about, and a lot of other progressives in Congress, is the federal jobs guarantee, so that you have a baseline of employment and you have a baseline of care work and infrastructure development that's community driven, you know, with all sorts of green technology, all sorts of possibilities in terms of using renewable energy, and, you know, kind of making a real change to infrastructure and energy systems that are better for the climate. But that kind of model of feeding the demand side of an economic system is fundamentally different than what's going on right now, but is not something that we haven't done in this country before, and that people haven't done in other countries before. You know, that's sort of why he says over and over again, this is not a radical idea. I mean, this is FDR. I mean, I'm not a macroeconomist, and the arguments for all of his programs have been that this is going to cost too much, and these aren't possible, nothing things for free. This is pie in the sky. And yet, you know, these are economic programs that have been partially tested and just operate according to a different ethic of, well, you know, if we provide the basics for people to live and to work and opportunities, that will create a stimulus in the economy.
It's an attractive vision. Heather, we're on our membership drive now. Your book is really worth reading, and it's a great analysis. So, Heather, give us a brief discussion of alternative media and Bernie becoming such a popular U.S. figure and his politics.
I think that even when Bernie was the mayor of Burlington, his appeal moved beyond the state of Vermont, and part of the reason was because the left media had paid attention to him and what he was trying to do. I know when I started, the day that I met him as a senator, he was about to do the radio show with Tom Hartman that he had been doing for years every Friday at the same time. I think there was a mutual commitment on the part of independent media and Bernie himself in trying to build, you know, consciousness for the ideas that he was working toward. That support was fundamental. You know, when he ran for president, he was not a known entity, and I think he was at 5% or something in the polls, but he did have a base of supporters around the country far more than most mayors or members of the House of Representatives. Again, when I worked in his Senate office in 2012, Bernie had one of the largest social media followings in Congress, and I really believe that a lot of that can be attributed to the groundwork that was laid by independent left media really over the course of 20 years.
Heather Gottney, it was really good talking to you. Good luck and do well in your new post at Our Revolution. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Okay. And we are here at Pledge Central. I'm Barbara. I'm here with Liz. And we're here to remind you that now is the time to call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU. And when you do that, you're going to become part of this great voice that you've been hearing. I've been talking with Heather Gottney, who is a Bernie Sanders person who moved up through the ranks of Bernie Sanders and is a leading organizer in Our Revolution now, and one of the many voices you hear on KABU. And we can provide this kind of programming because you're going to call right now at 877-500-5266 or go online and pledge your support at kboo.fm and become a member. And with your contributions, your support, we're able to bring this kind of programming to you every day, 24 hours a day, that keeps you alive and well and resilient here in Portland, Oregon.
That's right, Barbara. We'd like to thank some folks who've already become members and are now increasing their monthly contributions. Thanks to Susan in North Portland, who increased her monthly contribution. And also thanks to Tammy in Portland, who gave an additional gift to her already existing membership. We so appreciate the extra effort that you are going to keep KABU, your community radio station, on the air. I just want to give a shout out to all of you who think you may be members, but you're not sure if your membership is current. You know, you can check that with us and with our volunteers who are standing by to take your call. But we do need to hear from you right now. 877-500-5266. If your membership has lapsed, you can always renew it. If your membership is current and you're a little flush and have a little extra money, you can do like Susan and Tammy did and maybe pitch in an extra $5 a month if that works for you right now. We really appreciate that. And wait for it. During the Old Mole Variety Show this hour, we have a $250 match, which is contributed by a generous anonymous donor. And that means that every amount that you pledge will be matched up to $250 per donation.
So you should jump on that opportunity right now because it'll double your or magnify your donation.
That's right.
And help as you call right now at 877-500-5266.
Make your dollars go further.
And where do they go for? I think about how we do this public affairs programming every morning here on KABU. And as public affairs, it's generated by and for and from the community. It's really different from the kinds of stuff you hear on more mainstream public radio, where it comes from Washington, D.C. or New York or L.A. And it really doesn't really touch in your life the same way that the kind of programming we do here at KBOO does. Not that we don't also have a national, international perspective, and you'll hear that. Actually, you hear it during the morning and as well as in the afternoon during our news and public affairs programming and our news show in the evening. But we come from a place that is a local voice, and it's a community voice, and it comes from the grassroots, and that's what makes us so different from the more corporate kind of generated public broadcasting, which is actually very much like commercial media. It's really beholden to the dollars that support it. Here, we're beholden to the dollars that support us, but the dollars are coming from you.
That's right. You know, 80% of our funding comes from individual listeners just like you. So you, if not you yourself. So you there commuting to work by whatever means you normally get there. You there who are sitting at home in your home office because you don't have a morning commute, drinking your cup of coffee or chai or whatever your beverage of choice. You taking your morning walk with your dog, whoever you are, wherever you are, 80% of our funding comes from people just like you. And that really makes a difference. So if you're thinking to myself, I've got almost nothing, I'm really broke, what difference does it make my $5 a month? It does make a difference. Bernie Sanders himself proved that in his campaign, taking lots and lots and lots of small donations. I think the average donation amount for him was $27 per person, you know, and he ran a viable campaign that could have gone a lot further had not the DNC shut him down. That's a whole other discussion, which we won't get into. But
you heard it on KBOO.
You heard it on KBOO. That's right. You may not hear it anywhere else. And that alone is reason to pick up your phone right now. Barbara, what's that number?
The number is 877-500-5266. But if you're the shy kind who doesn't like to talk to people this early in the morning, you, like me, have not had enough coffee yet, you can go to your computer and you can punch in KBOO.FM, and there's a donate button right at the top. In fact, actually, when you go to that website right now, there's a page that pops up that will take you directly to where you can give us some money before you get to see the rest of our wonderful website. Again, the web is KBOO.FM, and our phone number, if you'd like to chat with our very friendly folks that are sitting right behind Liz and me, the number to call is 877-500-5266. We are so pleased to be able to present programming like the Old Mole.
Another way that you can become a member is if you're one of those extroverted types who likes to meet people, you can come on down to the station and visit us in person and bring in your fistful of sweaty dollars or your check or your credit card and talk to us in person. We love it when people do that. Our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We are between Burnside and Ankeny, next to the Jupiter Hotel in inner Southeast Portland. We would love to see you, and we're going to be heading back to the program in just a moment. So don't forget, 877-500 5266 KBOO.FM. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara and Liz. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio, Portland 90.7 FM, and it's listener supported. And we thank you all for supporting KBOO this morning and all year long. Later in our program, we have Lori Mercier talking with Deborah Thorne about the graying of consumer bankruptcy, how the shrinking of the social safety net is throwing record numbers of older individuals into economic crisis. But next up, we have Jan Hawken with Judith Arcana on Measure 106, the anti-abortion measure on the ballot this fall. Jan?
Welcome to KBOO, Judith Arcana, who also has a program here on KBOO, a poetry hour once a month. But we, many in the Portland community know about your work as a writer, which focuses on the politics of motherhood and abortion, among other topics. You were a Jane member, an underground abortion service that operated before abortion was legalized by the Supreme Court in 1973, in the famous Roe v. Wade decision.
Yes.
Well, with the Brett Kavanaugh appointment likely to go through
indeed
soon, and the further movement of the court to the right, there is certainly widespread worry, some would say even panic, about the court overturning Roe v. Wade. Well, history is never a matter of returning to an earlier era, because the dynamics of each period differ in important respects.
Absolutely, the culture changes.
But what can we learn from that period before Roe v. Wade? There are perhaps some enduring insights from that period of struggle. abortion was important. It wasn't the dividing issue between the Democrat and Republican Party, but it certainly carried an important place in the women's movement prior to the early women's movement, prior to the Roe v. Wade decision and a number of states to legalize it before it went before the Supreme Court. Tell us a little bit about Jane, what it did, and then we can talk about some of the important insights from that period of struggle.
Sure. The Abortion Counseling Service of the Chicago Women's Liberation Union, which is the actual name of the service. Now, of course, everybody just calls it Jane, but we didn't. We just called it the service. And it was, in fact, a work group of the union, of the Chicago Women's Liberation Union, even though it was illegal and supposedly a secret, of course. Abortion services, abortion health care, has always been an open secret. Certainly here in Portland, we have the history of Ruth Barnett and many, many other providers in the first half of the 20th century who operated fairly openly, I think it is reasonable to say.
And some would say more safely than the back alley abortion term, that women did die of abortion, but I think there is this history of people performing abortion safely.
The back alley abortion, butcher abortion, they exist for a whole constellation of reasons. One of them, of course, that certainly women have been hideously victimized because of abortion being made illegal and very, very difficult to obtain.
And like many illegal or illicit activities have to be done under conditions that are less than optimal,
exactly,
often quite quickly.
Exactly. And so we have those terms, we have that notion. However, as I think you're leading to, there were lots of people, and indeed in the moment right now while we are talking, there are, again, lots of people who are highly skilled, extremely compassionate, and very effective at supplying abortion health care in the United States and elsewhere on the planet. Because even if Roe is, as people like to say, on the books, which is to say it has not yet been overturned, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, more than 90% of counties in this country do not have abortion health care services available. And for many women in huge swaths of the national geography, there are few options. But a few of those few options are folks, usually women, sometimes midwives and nurses, sometimes doctors, as in your own research and your film, Our Bodies, Our Doctors, who are indeed being of use in a very serious and important way to folks for whom abortion might as well be illegal. Roe might as well have already been overturned in terms of what's available in this nation.
And I think one of the protections of Roe v. Wade, but that was of interest to me coming out of that early period, being part of the Feminist Women's Health Center and also a nurse active around this issue at the time in the early 70s, was the role of the medical profession. And how much the medical profession held the power of women's lives. You know, the therapeutic abortion meant you could, in some states, go before a panel of doctors if you had a sad enough story to tell.
Right, you had to plead your case.
Right,
so to
and
speak.
And I wanted to include you in this film I just completed because you were so effective in calling out the medical profession on this issue and how their position in the regulation of abortion. What protections did Roe v. Wade provide in that way? Because you've spoken to that in your own work.
I think that what Roe was there are a few ways in which Roe has been extremely valuable. One, obviously, is that it encouraged the medical industry and it came about through negotiations between the judiciary and the medical industry. I mean, we know this. It wasn't a secret. What happened was that they saw, instead of just saying we run it and all of your lives, everyone of all genders, are in our hands, we can take over this entire sector of healthcare, which we have heretofore sneered at, that's not a direct quote, but that is essentially what I think their attitude was, we can take this over. Some of them, of course, were quite wonderful, like the ones in your movie. The majority have not been that great because of sexism, because of the power of the medical industry, because money became a major player in even the legal arena in which abortions were made available.
And it was through Roe v. Wade, it became a private decision between a woman and her doctor. And Carol Jaffe has written a wonderful book on this history and how the transfer of authority from the husband to the physician, who had always been in this position of quasi-guardianship in women's lives.
Yes. Let me help you out, honey.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And of course, women who have been able to appeal to a family physician, and there's a long history of that, and even physicians who are very sympathetic to the plights of women carrying pregnancies they don't want or can't care for.
Right.
But that this all was never available to poor women in general who did not have a family physician. Social class politics have been very important.
And what I was interrupting you rudely to introduce into the conversation is that we need to never forget that Roe was decided or announced in January of 73, and literally 3 years later, it took one of the biggest hits that it's taken in its whole history when the Hyde Amendment went through in the federal government, which made it impossible or nearly impossible.
Because there are a few extreme exceptions,
yes. But we're talking about the majority of women and girls here. And the Hyde Amendment took away financial support for poor women, and that
to be able to use Medicaid
to pay for their abortion health care.
And that's what's at stake with 106, a ballot measure in
exactly.
Oregon, which is a long history of denying access to poor women.
Yes.
And that's what's at stake.
And we can't be so happy about the fact that Oregon is, you know, better than many other states, maybe some people say than all other states, we are better with abortion health care, that we don't realize how important it is to seriously read the measure and vote appropriately.
And part of the importance of this is that Oregon is one of some dozen or so states, 15 states, that supplements what the federal government will
yes.
not provide in Medicaid by guaranteeing that women on the Oregon Health Plan who have Medicaid services can have their abortions covered.
Yes, and this measure would eviscerate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, would just cut it right out.
And another area of the politics of abortion that was there from the beginning and I think has been the frontier of the right to life or anti-abortion movement is this question of it being a private decision until viability. And of course, medical viability is a moving target.
Yes.
Right. Because you can have now, you can keep a fetus of 6 months alive, but
yes.
it's apt to have health problems, require special
care.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so
it's a tragic situation. I'm going to call it a tactical error on the part of the anti-abortion movement. It's bad for babies. It's bad for their mommies. It's not a good thing what they're doing.
And most of the women who are pushed into later abortions, which are more medically difficult.
Oh, definitely. And
risky,
and also, risky.
Are poor women who have trouble traveling, accessing the services
and
to figure out what
women,
to do.
Teenagers who didn't even know they were pregnant until they were almost 4 months. People who are in dire straits from the jump then suffer even more.
And there's something very punitive about the attitude toward particular women who, quote, wait too long. What we're here today also to raise support for the the show and for KBOO. You're a KBOO volunteer.
I am. I encourage everybody listening.
What's your skin in this game?
Sign up, folks. You're lucky to have KBOO. We're lucky to have KBOO. This is the voice of the people here in Portland, in Oregon.
So thanks for being with us here on the show today. This
thank you.
Jan Hocken talking with Judith Arcana, and she has a website. You can see more about her work at juditharcana.com.
And you are back with Liz and Barbara, and we are here for KBOO's fall membership drive.
You know,
and we just heard Judith and Barbara talking about the voice of the people, and we definitely need to hear the voice of the people right now. 877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm. You are the voice of our KBOO community. At any given time, we have a whole lot of listeners, and only about less than 10% of those listeners are actual contributing members, and we would like to change that. It would be great if we could have at least 10% of our listeners become contributing members, and there's a really terrific way to do that that only lasts for this upcoming hour. Barbara, tell us about that.
We have a $250 match for the Old Mole Variety Hour tonight. It's contributed by a generous anonymous member. So if you were to call up right now at 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and make a pledge of, let's say, $10 a month, which is $120 a year, that will be doubled by this $250 match.
Yes.
So do it right now. Give a call at KB at 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm, and you can click there and donate. And you can do just as these following people did. Jay from North Portland,
yay,
who gave an additional contribution because he loves the Old Mole. Yay!
Yay! And who doesn't, really?
And then there's Clayton from Southeast Portland because he values public affairs on KBOO.
Of course we do. And we all do.
And then this one, which should be our mantra.
Yes.
Bill, who said KBOO is a breath of life.
Inhale.
And that's your inhaling.
Exhale.
KBOO. Yes.
So, yay.
Thank you, Bill, for your contribution and also for that wonderful byline that we can use now. KBOO, a breath of life.
That's right. You know, and all those three folks who just called in and either made new contributions, became new members, or added to their existing contribution, they all mentioned what their reason was for doing so. What's your reason for valuing KBOO? Why are you listening to us right now? What do we do for you? Think about that. Think about the place that KBOO has in your life, in the way that you learn about the world. How much value do you place on what KBOO brings to you each and every weekday morning with its public affairs programming? And then put a dollar value on it. 877-500-5266. That number one more time. 877-500-5266. Or again, go online, easy as pie, kboo.fm. Become a contributing member. You're sort of being a passive member if you're just listening.
Become an active member.
Become an active member. You know, step away from passivity and up to activity here.
Right.
And
join the KBOO revolution.
That's right. That's right. And plus, you know, again, during this hour, your contribution will be doubled painlessly. So why wouldn't you take advantage of that? You know, we've only got less than half an hour left in the Old Mole. So why wouldn't you take advantage of this fabulous matching opportunity?
Well, there's no reason not to. Right now, go to your phone and call 877-500-5266, just like Roger from Vancouver did. And he loves the Old Mole, and that's why he renewed.
Yay!
Thanks for renewing, Roger. And so, again, if you are shy, you can always just sit at your computer and type in kboo.fm, and right there on the first screen that will come up is a place that will take you where you can donate. And also, I just want to, in case just the awesomeness of KBOO's radio signal and all the content that we provide every day for 24 hours a day, if that's not enough, we have another incentive. If you were tuning in earlier this morning and you heard the interview that Bill did with Heather Gottney, you can get a copy of her book, Crashing the Party, From the Bernie Sanders Campaign to a Progressive Movement. And we heard how she organized when Bill was talking to her. Well, now you can read her book. And I don't know how much you need. I'm assuming it's probably a $60 pledge.
Our volunteers who are standing by can give you that information. But you do got to call 877 877- 800-500-5266. You know, and the thing about this book, if you missed the segment that started at the beginning of the hour, fear not, because all of our audio is now archived and all of the public affairs programming is now podcastable. And so you can download it and listen to it at your pleasure in your own time on your own device. So you don't need to worry about, you know, I didn't catch that interview, so what do I care about this book? You can go back and listen and then say, oh, I want to read that book. That book sounds fantastic. This is just one of the newer things that KBOO is offering you, that we've been podcasting and archiving all of our audio over the last few years. This is another way that KBOO is expanding its offerings and its access to our community. We know you appreciate that because you're listening to us right now. Show your appreciation by becoming a member. 877-500-5266. Make sure you get in on that matching grant. We've only got 21 minutes left. 877-500-5266. Online at kboo.fm. And thank you very much.
All right. Thanks again, Liz and Barbara, for your help getting support for KBOO and the Old Mole Variety Hour and your love for the Old Mole Variety Hour. We appreciate all of that. Next up, we have Lori Mercier talking with Deborah Thorne about the graying of consumer bankruptcy. Lori?
Thanks, Denise. Deborah Thorne is Associate Professor of Sociology at University of Idaho, where she researches and publishes about economic inequality, debt, and consumer bankruptcy. She's a principal investigator on the nationally recognized Consumer Bankruptcy Project and author of a new study called Grain of U.S. Bankruptcy, Fallout from Life in a Risk Society, which we want to discuss today. Welcome to KBOO, Deborah Thorne.
Hey, thanks for the invitation. I'm from Pendleton, so it's nice to be on an Oregon station.
Yes, at the other side of the state. Great.
Yeah.
Well, this new report from the Consumer Bankruptcy Project finds that since 1991, the rate of Americans age 65 to 74 filing for bankruptcy has doubled, and the rate for those age 75 and over has tripled. What explains this rapid rise in bankruptcy filings of the elderly?
Well, what we have concluded is what's behind this rise is what's called a risk shift. So that responsibilities, particularly economic responsibilities that historically had been picked up or covered at by the government or by private employers, have been shifted off onto individuals, and they simply can't cover those costs. So let me give you the examples. We have had a history of employers covering, for example, large employers covering health care, providing health insurance for their workers, and an adequate or more adequate Medicare system. And that has shifted. We are shifting more of the financial responsibility off onto individuals. The same thing has happened with retirement accounts. Two of the largest expenditures, retirement accounts, where we historically had pensions, and those were managed by people other than the individual. Now we have the 401ks or IRAs, and those are typically managed by people like you and me who have probably no experience in investing. And when we screw up, we lose our retirement.
So even though I think we all know that all social programs have been under attack, really since the 1980s in the Reagan administration, and this has
right.
been carried on by both political parties, actually, over the last several decades.
Yeah.
I think many people assume that the right wing has had more difficulty cutting Social Security, which has been a very popular program since it was instituted in 1935 and then expanded with Medicare in 1965. So what explains then the fact that these programs still exist and have not been cut as severely as other social programs, but yet we're seeing the elderly really living more perilously?
Right. There's a variety of ways to undermine or get rid of, to social programs that benefit people, and one of those is just a flat out frontal assault, and you get rid of it. So we say, well, why haven't we just gotten rid of Social Security? Well, that wouldn't be effective, right? You couldn't really pull that off because there's a lot of us who benefit from it. We're not going to stand for it being completely eliminated. But a more effective way, if you want to covertly diminish or reduce the costs associated with it or reduce that benefit, is you do simple things like, well, simple, strategic things like you extend the age at which you can, recipients can receive full benefits. And you do, you just chip away at that system a little bit at a time in ways that people won't really really raise holy cane about. You just do it pretty a little bit at a time, or you let things expire. For example, politicians can let programs or parts of programs expire and just not update them. So it's Jacob Hacker, who is a social scientist, talks a lot about this and discusses it as a form of drift, where you just, you don't destroy it completely. You just let it kind of drift. The benefits kind of drift away and diminish. So, for example, I mean, when we look at, full retirement age for Social Security, full benefits are now at 70. Now, you can retire anytime you want. 62, I think, is the earliest you can start drawing. But if you want full benefits, it's now up to 70 years old. So just a little bit at a time, we start undermining. And you know, most people, I didn't know this for a long time, but you have to pay for your Medicare. And it only covers a certain portion of your medical expenses. So it's about 80%. The remaining 20 you have to purchase, and that's getting greater. Every year is the cost to purchase the additional health insurance to cover what Medicare doesn't.
And
just a little bit at a time.
And certainly health care costs have been increasing dramatically over the last few decades.
Right.
And that is a major cause of bankruptcy, medical bankruptcy, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, medical reasons, medical and a decline in income, those are the top two reasons for older folks filing for bankruptcy.
And it seems like that confirms the need for single-payer health care system to help such a huge percentage of Americans who are really on the brink of economic disaster with one health care crisis.
Absolutely. I mean, if someone can come up with something better, great, right? But what we have now is not working. People write their stories on the back of the survey. We ask them to share their stories if they feel comfortable with it, with doing so. And these medical problems are taking people out. People, older people who have done everything right, they've worked their entire lives. They have savings accounts. They have 401ks. They've purchased supplemental insurance. And it doesn't take much, and particularly a chronic illness, dementia, cancer, multiple sclerosis, diabetes. I mean, all of these illnesses that often hit us as we age, it's going to be tough to avoid them as we get older, and anything chronic like that, they simply can't, it doesn't matter how prepared they were, they can't sustain those medical expenses. And I had an article come out 15 years ago on medical bankruptcies with Himmelstein and Wohlhandler and Warren, and the point of the article, we talked about medical bankruptcies, and the point is the majority of Americans are one serious illness away from medical bankruptcy. One. I mean, if I got cancer right now, I'm the primary breadwinner. There goes my health insurance because I can't work, and there goes our income.
But yet there is this focus on the individual's responsibility and moving away of some kind of collective consciousness about the importance of a social safety net for all citizens.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in the late 1800s, there's some really wonderful writing on the history of how we cared for older people or didn't. In the late 1800s, older poor people were thrown out into the streets or into the poorhouses, or were in some instances were actually sold into slavery. White people. Now, I recognize older black people were already in slavery, but older white people were sold into slavery if they were poor. And then, you know, the 1930s and thereabouts, we had a movement in this country where we said we're not going to individualize the care of older people, people in general, but primarily older people. And it seems to be a policy shift such that we're moving back toward that, and we're saying good luck in your retirement years. I hope you make it.
What about the effects on people of color in particular, and also people who do physical labor? With the increase of the retirement benefit at age 70, I mean, that puts a lot of people at jeopardy who have not only serious illnesses, but who have very demanding work.
Right. So we didn't explicitly break out people of color in our research. Our sample wasn't large enough to do that component. But, for example, other research has highlighted, for example, how much wealth white folks have in contrast to people of color, particularly blacks and Hispanics, and the discrepancy between the two. It's astronomical. A quick Google search will show you the wealth disparity between whites and people of color. And often it's our wealth that can, our wealth is different from our income. So that may be what we have in a retirement account is considered wealth. Equity that we have in our home is considered wealth, and white people have significantly more than people of color. And those kinds of assets can sustain us to a greater degree if we have a big financial stumble. So we know that people of color have fewer assets to fall back on. And the other thing about extending the age when you're a physical laborer, it's a no-brainer. When you have women and men who have been standing on their feet and doing physical labor their entire lives, and you expect them to go to 70, I've had a fairly comfortable job. I'm going to be lucky to make it to 65. Our bodies give. Like people in the construction industry, those people, men primarily, but they're ready to retire when they're 55. Their bodies are finished.
Or retail workers, or lots of other domestic workers, lots of other workers who have to use their bodies or on their feet all day.
On their feet. Retail, where you're standing at it behind a counter or, you know, the machines all day long. It's very, very difficult. I think it's very unrealistic, and I'd love to see some research on this. I don't know of any right off the bat, but at what age should the people who are physically doing physical labor, at what age should they realistically be allowed to retire? It's not 70.
Finally, Deborah Thorne, since bankruptcy and bankruptcy laws were enacted in order to help people escape a lifetime of indebtedness, I mean, is there anything that could also happen in addition to expanding the social safety net and universal health care, anything that could help improve people's outcomes by expanding exemptions or changing?
Mm-hmm. It's going to have to be policy change. And the two reasons for bankruptcy again and again and again are decline in income. This is regardless of age. Unexpected decline in income and medical costs. One of the things that is appears to be creating a problem right now is instability in employment. And again, this is often for people in their working years, not so much in retirement, but that's a struggle for them as well if they're trying to get another job. Instability in the employment sector and very weak unemployment insurance, inadequate unemployment insurance. And the other big issue, which people don't talk a lot about, is the fact that wages have been pretty stagnant since the mid-70s, and there was just a report that came out recently talking about half of Americans, 50%, over 50% of Americans, I believe it was, are paycheck to paycheck still.
Yeah.
This growing economy hasn't benefited most people.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Deborah Thorne, for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour.
You bet. Thanks for the invite.
And thank all of you for listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour this hour on Monday, September 17th. My name is Liz. I'm here with Barbara. And we are taking our last opportunity this hour to ask you to become a member of a contributing member of KBOO by calling 877-500-5266. And the really important thing to remember during our last break during the Old Mole Show is that we still have a matching grant of $250 donated by a generous anonymous member. And this is an opportunity for you to contribute up to $250, which will be matched dollar for dollar. I don't know why anybody would wait. Pick up that phone right now, 877-500-5266. So what does this mean? It means if you pledge $60 a year at $5 a month, then your pledge will be instantly doubled. It's painless. It's amazing. And your dollars go that much further. Why would you wait? Why dilly-dally? Why ponder? Just do it, people. 877-500-5266. Barbara?
Or you can also go online if you're the shy type and go to kboo.fm and click on donate. Actually, it'll just make you donate unless you click on the little X box.
Is that a dig at me? You're saying I'm not shy? I'm not, but, you know, I'm just wondering.
I don't think you're shy. Also, we have copies of this wonderful book, Crashing the Party, by Heather Gottney, who was the guest at the beginning of the hour. And you can get that for, we believe, a $60 pledge. Again, if you call at kboo.fm, try again. If you call it 877-500-5266 or online, you can go to kboo.fm. You know, Liz, we haven't talked about dollar amounts this hour.
That's true.
And so, I was thinking, because this is what I give. I give it $10 a month. It comes out of my bank account. I just try to remember to write it in the check register every month. Other than that, I don't have to do anything.
Right. You don't have to think about it because it happens automatically. There's no bill. There's no paper. It just automatically happens. And it is safe and secure.
Right. And nobody has hacked that card.
That's right.
Our bank account. Unlike the other things that are always getting hacked pay online. It's very safe. And it's a wonderful way to keep KBOO just going. It's like this little influx of cash that we get every month that keeps us going, a little transfusion from from your bank account to our bank account. And so I highly recommend, if you can come up with $10 a month, it's really pretty painless. And it is and the rewards are so great. The rewards are the wonderful programming that you get on the station 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the amazing public affairs and shows like Old Mole Variety Hour, which are very unique to the airwaves.
Very.
And you hear people and discussions. I mean, the discussions today, whether it's talking about the Bernie Sanders, the lessons from the Bernie Sanders campaign and how to build a really progressive movement in this country, or talking about the history of abortion, legality, illegality, and legality, and maybe
and
back to
restricting the ever more laws that are trying to restrict access to abortion
and
women
then
all over this country.
This scary Supreme Court nominee who maybe is about to get derailed,
we hope.
Anyway, this is the kind of stuff that you hear on KBOO every day. Well, not every day, but every Monday you hear these kind of programs.
You hear public affairs on KBOO every weekday morning from 9 to noon, and the topics span the gamut, really. I mean, you never know what you're going to hear, but you do know that it's going to be well thought out and well researched, and the people who are bringing you this information have done their homework. You know, it's we're not just being handed some book saying, please promote my book. You know, they've read the book and they've talked to the author beforehand, and they know what they're talking about and they're passionate about the issue. And we know that that's important to you, that kind of in-depth commitment to the news. If it's that important to you, show your support right now becoming a contributing member. How do they do it? 877-500-5266, or again, go online at kboo.fm. Just a reminder that 80% of our budget comes from direct member support.
And so why
80%?
So while more corporate public radio is dependent a lot on very large corporate donors who do shape their policy, like learning that NPR has a major donor, the Koch brothers, we're very different. The Koch brothers don't give us any money. You give us the money, and you can give us the money right now by calling 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and become a member right now.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Liz and Barbara. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. It is a collective labor that brings you the Old Mole every Monday morning at 9 a.m. And I want to thank our contributors and guests this morning, Bill Resnick and Heather Gottney, Jan Hawken, Judith Arcana, Lori Mercier, and Deborah Thorne. Remember, you can find us on the web. Look for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO's own website, kboo.fm/Old Mole Variety Hour. Coming up on KBOO this morning at 10, it's Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein, who talks to conservation biologist Thor Hansen, about author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. At 11, Economic Update with Richard Wolff, who outlines the Keynesian versus Marxian and neoclassical economics. All of this is good information. Thanks to everyone who contributed this morning to support KBOO and the Old Mole. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. You can become a member during this fall membership drive by calling 877-500-5266. Thank you.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by New Cascadia Traditional, located at 1700 Southeast 6th Avenue. New Cascadia Traditional is open daily and provides a wide variety of bread with gluten-free options. Lunch was provided by Sizzle Pie, located at 624 East Burnside Street. Sizzle Pie offers vegan, veggie, meat, and gluten-free pizzas, along with salads, local beer, wine, and spirits. Dinner was provided by Cannon's Barbecue Rib Express, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, serving hickory smoked barbecue with house-made sauces. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934, and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The KBOO Board of Directors will meet twice in September. The first meeting is Monday, September 17th at 6 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032.
And good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Columbia Land Trust, conserving and connecting people with the nature of the Northwest. More information, including tours, events, and volunteers.